Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for, what's today? Thursday, October 22nd, and we continue with some of the obituary notices appearing in the Decatur Herald and Review. Mary Ann Dennis, 80, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, October 19th, in her home. Honoring Mary Dennis's wishes, cremation services will be provided by Graceland Fairlawn Crematory. No services are planned at this time. Memorial donations may be directed to an organization of the donor's choice. Kent L. Ferrer, I guess, that's F-E-R-R-E, 60, of Decatur, died on Friday, October 16th, in McKinley Court Nursing Home. He will be buried in Indiana with his parents. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is assisting with the arrangements. Ruby K. Gray, 90, of Assumption, Illinois, died October 19th in Hilltop Skilled Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Charleston. Funeral services are scheduled to be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, in Sites Funeral Home in Assumption. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday. Just before that service, burial will be in Pleasant View Cemetery in Assumption. Memorials may be made to Tecusa Outreach, the Assumption Food Pantry. Jack E. Haney of Decatur went with the Lord on Wednesday, October 14th at 6:35 p.m. at Eisenhower Hospital in Palm Desert, California. Service will be announced at a later date. Jack Hockaday, 87, of Forsyth, died on Wednesday, October 21st, at Hickory Point Christian Village. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, at Forsyth Baptist Church. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, October 23rd, at Printlinger and Earl Funeral Home, and from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday at the church. Burial will be in Boiling Spring Cemetery in Decatur. Memorial donations may be made to Forsyth Baptist Church. Ted A. Jankowski, 89, of Morrison, died on Tuesday, October 20th, in his home surrounded by his loving family. Visitation will be held tomorrow, Friday, October 23rd, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the McDonald Funeral Home, 12th Avenue in Rock Falls. The funeral will follow on Saturday at 10 a.m. at St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Morrison with the Reverend Mark Winkleman officiating. Burial will be at Oak Knoll Cemetery in Sterling. Memorial donations may be made to St. Jude Children Research Hospital or to Gaffey Home Services. Daniel Lynn Meyer passed away peacefully at 12:22 a.m. October 18th, surrounded by a circle of love. Memorial services will be held, will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. at Walker Funeral Service. So I would recommend you call the Walker Funeral Service in Decatur to get some better details. Gather Buster Bernard Warnsley, Sr., 74, of Decatur, went to be with his Lord on Friday, October 16th, in Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. Services to celebrate Gaither's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to that service, and burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Mary L. Whiteman, 86, of Springfield, passed away Sunday, October 18th, in Memorial Medical Center, surrounded by her family. Honoring Mary's wishes, cremation services will be provided by Graceland Fairlawn Crematory. No services are planned at this time. Timothy Everett Deem, 65, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, October 19th, at Symphony of Decatur after a long battle with cancer. Funeral services were scheduled at noon today at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur, with visitation occurring prior to that service, and casual attire was requested. Burial was scheduled to take place at Graceland Cemetery, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Deem family. Patricia Ann Barlow, 77, of Clinton, passed away at 9:19 a.m. October 19th at her residence, surrounded by her family in Clinton, Illinois. Services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, October 23rd, at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, Illinois, with Pastor Mark Phillips officiating. The family requests casual attire. Burial will follow at Lisenby Cemetery in Lane, Illinois. Visitation will be held this evening from 5 to 7 p.m., that's Thursday, October 22nd, at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorial donations may be directed to the Patricia Barlow Memorial Fund. Beulah Agnes Aunt Boo Businger, 102, of Taylorville, passed away at 7:55 p.m. Sunday, October 18th, at Meadow Manor Nursing Home in Taylorville. Funeral services for Beulah will be held, held early this morning, Thursday, October 22nd, at the McClure Funeral Home, with the Reverend Billy Bob Howard officiating, and visitation was held before that service. Burial was scheduled to be in the old Stonington Cemetery in Stonington. Memorial donations may be made to the old Stonington Baptist Church. The McClure Funeral Home in Taylorville assisted the Businger family with arrangements. Sonia I. Bunning, 68, of Mattoon, a former resident of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, October 17th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Services for Sonia will be private. Memorial contributions may be made to the Decatur Catholic Charities, 247 West Prairie, Decatur, Illinois, 62523. Marion L. Hildebrandt, 91, of Springfield, formerly of Iliopolis and Riverton, went to be with the Lord at 7:22 p.m. on Sunday, October 18th, at Lewis Memorial Christian Village. Visitation is this evening, that's Thursday, October 22nd, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Boardman Smith Funeral Home, 800 South Grand Avenue West in Springfield. Visitation will begin with a prayer service led by Reverend Clint Honkomp, O.P. A funeral ceremony is scheduled to take place tomorrow at 10 a.m., that's October 23rd, at Boardman Smith Funeral Home, with Pastor Chuck Ferris officiating. Burial will follow at Riverside Cemetery in Iliopolis. Memorial contributions may be made to Memorial Home Services, 720 North Bond Street in Springfield, 62702, or to Lewis Memorial Christian Village at 3400 West Washington Street in Springfield, Illinois, 62711. Richard L. Howard, 86, of Lake City, passed away at 5:43 p.m. on Wednesday, October 7th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. The family of Richard L. Howard will be hosting a Celebration of Life memorial service on Sunday, October 25th at 1 p.m. at the La Place, United Methodist Church in La Place, Illinois. That's L-A, next word, P-L-A-C-E, Illinois. Please come share your favorite memories of Richard as we say goodbye. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations may be made to the La Place United Methodist Church. On October 15, our little four-month-old angel, Isaiah Carnell Johnson, was given his wings at 10:37 p.m. He was affectionately known by the family as Zay Zay, or Granny's Little Apple Head. Oh, dear. The family would like to give special thanks to St. John's PICU for taking good care of our precious loved one. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 23rd, at Main Street Church of the Living God, with visitation 1 hour before the service. Professional services have been entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Mary Frances Shepherd Spanbauer, 88, of Westerville, Ohio, peacefully passed away on Sunday, October 17th, at Columbus Colony Elderly Care in Westerville, Ohio. A mass of Christian burial was held earlier today, Thursday, October 22nd, at St. Thomas Catholic Church in Decatur. Visitation was held an hour prior to that service, and burial was scheduled to follow immediately at Calvary Cemetery at West El Dorado Street in Decatur. The family of Mary Frances Spanbauer is being served by Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services. We turn now to an editorial piece in the Decatur Herald and Review. It carries the headline, Focus Library Discussion on What Matters. It matters little to taxpayers whether the Decatur Public Library is owned by the Decatur Public Building Commission, the City of Decatur, or the Decatur Library Board. What does matter is that the library operates efficiently. Its disaster of a parking lot and other infrastructure needs are addressed, and that unused space in the building is put to productive use. That's where the discussion between the Library Board and the City should focus, beginning today when the Library Board considers a request by Mayor Julie Moore Wolf that the City be deemed owners of the library building. In a weird occurrence, the City lists the library building as an asset, but the Library Board holds the deed on the building. That's just one of the complicating factors in the relationship between the Library Board and the City. The Library Board, Macon County, and the Public Building Commission had worked out a deal where the Building Commission would own the library and take care of the infrastructure needs and maintenance. The county had plans to move its offices into the second floor and annex of the library, creating a better experience for county customers, and freeing up the building at 141 South Main Street for a private developer to build a residential development. The city, under former manager Ryan McCrady, had originally endorsed that deal, but new city manager Tim Gleason decided the council should have a say. The council has questions about the library being an asset and $735,000 in bonds the city still owes on the library. In her letter to the library board, Moore Wolf said the city is committed to preserving the library and that Decatur residents have paid for this building through taxes and contributions through your fundraising efforts. Library board members are set to meet today and start talking with city officials about the specifics of the proposal. Even though the city's late entry into this process has been clumsy, everyone should keep in mind that the goals remain the same. The library needs a solid financial future, and there needs to be guarantees that the infrastructure needs now and in the future will be addressed. The building also needs to be put to maximum use, and any time governments can shed property, it's usually a good thing. Finally, the opportunities for development need to be top of mind. Putting property back onto the tax rolls and serving the residential needs of downtown Decatur is important. Those are the goals the library board, the city, and everyone involved need to keep in mind. If those issues are addressed, which entity actually owns the library building is a secondary concern. We turn now to your opinion. That was the editors of the Decatur Herald and Review. We have a letter to the editor signed by Jenny Stringer of Pena. It carries the headline, Schools Must Address Mental Health Issues. Mental illness is the leading cause of suicidal thoughts, feelings, and actions. Unfortunately, at small schools such as the ones in central Illinois, there is little funding to hire a sufficient number of mental health care professionals. School screenings for mental health conditions can help the health of the students and decrease the suicide rate. However, screenings are only the base of the mental health care pyramid. On top of screenings, there should be a handful of knowledgeable mental health care professionals ready to be educators, facilitators, and enablers to students. An adolescent living with a mental health disorder can encounter many problems in a normal school day, such as anxiety or panic attacks, medicine interactions, aggressive behavior, and depressive symptoms. Not every faculty member in a kindergarten through grade 12 district needs to be trained in how to handle these situations. However, there needs to be mental health care professionals available to students at all times. A student who breaks their arm in physical education or simply has a slight fever will be seen by the school nurse or be excused from school to see a doctor. What happens if a student has depressive thoughts during class or has an anxiety attack? These students too often tough it out and go on with the rest of their day. But would you expect the student with a fever or broken arm to tough it out? Why isn't the physical and mental health of students treated equally? There are ways for everyone to help students with mental health problems. I ask you to please contact your elected officials and your local school district. Finally, I ask you to please seek help if you have a loved one who is suffering from or showing signs of a mental health disorder. You can save a life. We pick up now an article of local news that we weren't able to get to in the first half hour, written by Sharon Barraclow for the Herald and Review. Shelbyville okays business district tax water rate bump. And this is obviously from Shelbyville. Residents will be paying more for their water and sewer services and an additional 1% sales tax on the city's west side after the Shelbyville City Council approved new ordinances Monday night. The council approved a 30 cents per $1,000 sewer rate increase, taking Shelbyville's rates from $2.45 to $2.75. Water rates will go from $11.55 for the 2,000-gallon minimum to $13. Consumers will also see a $2 charge on their bills for new water meters. Councilman Bill Shoaff said earlier this year that the new rates were necessary because of continued losses in the sewer department that were offset through water sales. We have had expenses in the sewer department that we haven't been able to recoup through sewer rates, he said. Something has to be done. We don't like raising rates, but after checking around similar towns and their rates, I think this is the right thing to do. Council members are also hoping a new 1% sales tax on general merchandise will help businesses and residents on the city's west side. The council created a new business district paralleling West Illinois 16 to encompass much of the city's retail sales. By adding the sales tax to general merchandise sales in the area, the city hopes to raise funds to improve streets, add sidewalks, and provide funds for building, redevelopment, and recruiting new business. Before the regular council meeting, the city held a public hearing, but only one business person spoke about the proposed tax. I hate to see additional taxes, but we have things we need in the area, and I know the city is cash-strapped, restaurant owner Mark Shanks said. I support it because it will help provide things Shelbyville needs. Shanks and council members agreed a priority for the new business district would be sidewalks along Illinois 16 to link several shopping centers and restaurants. Shank said many residents of the West End currently walk between businesses on the highway. It's a dangerous situation, he said. Sidewalks will make it safer. Councilman Tom Schaefer said he disliked the state-mandated definition of the area as blighted to qualify for a business district. It's not a word I'd like to use, but if it means lacking services, then that's what it is, Schaefer said. The new tax will be collected beginning 2016. News Service writer Lenore Sabota has provided this article from Normal. ISU board to decide on major cuts Friday. The Illinois State University Board of Trustees will act Friday on a fiscal year 2016 operating budget with a reduction of at least 10% in state funding, even though the exact amount of the school's state appropriation remains unknown nearly 4 months into the fiscal year. The university is currently operating under a tentative budget approved at the board's May meeting. The resolution calls for approval of a $422.2 million operations budget that reflects a reduction of 10%, $7.4 million, in its state appropriation from fiscal year 2015. It may be less if the reduction of the state appropriation is greater than 10%. The university has developed contingency plans ranging from a 10% reduction to a 31% reduction. The latter would represent a decrease of $22.9 million. The degree to which the specifics of those contingency plans are discussed Friday will depend on the board, according to Jay Groves, ISU Chief of Staff. The budget proposed by Governor Bruce Rauner called for a 31.5% reduction in state funding for universities. The budget approved by the General Assembly and vetoed by Rauner included an 8.5% reduction in funding for universities. We expect there will be some type of substantial reduction, Grove said. ISU president Larry Dietz was among several university presidents and college students who were in Springfield on Tuesday to lobby lawmakers to act on the state budget. The board meeting begins at 10 a.m. Friday in the Bone Student Center's Old Main Room. It will be preceded by a discussion hour at 9 a.m. in the center's faculty staff commons on the work of ISU's Stevens Center for Community and Economic Development. Also on the quarterly meeting agenda is an fiscal year 2017 appropriated operating and capital budget request to be approved and sent to the Illinois Board of Higher Education. The $238 million capital request is essentially a wish list, little change from previous years, that includes rehabilitation of Milner Library and a Mennonite College of Nursing building as its top two priorities. And a quick note, this is an AP Wire Service story out of Richmond, Virginia. DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, deadly teen crashes up 19% in 2015. The Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles says 25 teenagers have died to date this year in crashes, a 19% increase over last year. The DMV says speeding and running off the road are the leading causes of deadly crashes involving teenagers. More than 50% of those fatal crashes involved both factors. The department also said nearly two-thirds who were killed were not wearing seat belts. The statistics were compiled to mark National Teen Driver Week Safety. Things are not going well in Virginia. Let me see if we've got a report for teen drivers here in Illinois. Oh, I'm not finding a comparable story for Illinois, but I missed an article. We're not going to be able to read all of it. Let me get started. Park District contemplates tax increase. Golf in the future. As the Decatur Park District muddled through 5 years of declining property values, it put off major capital needs. Those costs have caught up to the district, Chief Financial Officer Rodney Burr told the Park Board Wednesday. While there is good news in the form of expected 1.4% property value increase, the capital needs could push commissioners to consider an increase in property tax rates. Everything's getting older and we keep pushing things back, Burr said. And the delays add up. Most notably, the roof of the Fairview Park Pavilion No. 1 is in desperate need of repair at an estimated cost of $330,000. A few years ago, the cost was estimated at $200,000, but the district delayed work and the damage became greater and more expensive. There are also roughly $2 million in paving costs that need to be addressed in the next 3 years. The district's current property tax rate is $1.12 per $100 of equalized assessed value, which could bring in about $9.2 million in revenue next year. Burr presented options to keep the rate the same or to increase it by up to 3 cents. Each cent would bring in about $82,000 more for the district. It's a much longer article, and I am so sorry we did not get to all of it. I lost track of that one. Well, there's so much news always around Decatur and opinions, and we can't get to them all, I'm sorry to say. This has been Ruth McCauley reading from both the Decatur Herald and Review and the Tribune. For news around the Decatur area on Thursday, October 22nd. It's been a pleasure reading with you. As always, I look forward to doing it again real soon. Until then, y'all take care.